From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, the high, lonesome sound of Ralph Stanley. The bluegrass pioneer started making records in the 1940s, performing with his older brother Carter under the name the Stanley Brothers. Now Ralph Stanley is a pop phenomenon as a result of his performance on the platinum-selling soundtrack of the film Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which also won this year's Grammy for Record of the Year. Stanley has a new CD produced by T-Bone Burnett, who also produced the soundtrack. We'll listen to new and old recordings and talk with Stanley about his life. Also, book critic Maureen Corrigan reviews Why I Am a Catholic by Gary Wills. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. The Senate has overwhelmingly passed a bill designed to improve corporate accounting and impose stiffer penalties for business fraud. The bipartisan measure passed on a vote of 97-0, spurred by a wave of corporate accounting scandals and billions of dollars in losses to investors and workers. Passage of the bill came as President Bush urged Congress to get a reform bill to his desk before adjourning for the summer recess. The Senate bill must still be reconciled with a House measure that doesn't have the additional penalties for corporate fraud or stricter standards for accountants. House Speaker Dennis Hastert said the House and Senate will start work on a compromise measure tomorrow. John Walker Lind, the American captured in Afghanistan, has pleaded guilty to two criminal charges today, admitting that he soldiered for the Taliban. The surprise plea agreement came just as an important pretrial hearing was about to begin. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
The plea agreement spares Lind the possibility of spending the rest of his life in prison, but at the same time apparently ensures a sentence of 20 years behind bars. This morning, before accepting the guilty plea, Judge T.S. Ellis took Lind through a series of standard questions, culminating with the demand that the defendant describe what he did. The 21-year-old Californian responded, "I provided services as a soldier to the Taliban from August to December 2001. I carried a rifle and two grenades. I did so knowingly and willingly, and knowing it was illegal." Prosecutors said that as part of the plea bargain, Lind agreed to cooperate fully, to submit to a polygraph, and to brief intelligence authorities on what he knows. And he agreed that any profits from any book or movie that he might be paid for would be turned over to the government. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
A bipartisan group of senators has announced a proposal for a Medicare prescription drug benefit that could be debated this week. NPR's Julie Rovner reports.
The proposal by the group that calls itself tripartisan, because it includes Vermont independent Jim Jeffords, says its plan would come down between the one passed by House Republicans last month and one devised by Senate Democrats. For a premium of about $24 a month, the tripartisan plan would offer private coverage that would pay half of beneficiaries' drug costs up to $3,450, but then no more unless patients spent more than $3,700 of their own money. After that, the program would pay 90% of remaining costs for the year. The Senate Democrats' plan would pay a larger share with no interruption in coverage, but it would end in the year 2010 unless Congress voted to renew it. The Senate is expected to debate both the tripartisan and Democratic Medicare proposals later this week. Julie Rovner, NPR News, the Capitol.
The Dow lost 45 points today to close at 8,639. The Nasdaq gained 9 to close at 1,382. This is NPR News. President Bush said today that U.S. economic fundamentals are strong despite concerns over corporate fraud and the tumbling stock market. Speaking at the University of Alabama in Birmingham, the president said the nation is currently suffering a hangover caused by what he called the price binge of the 1990s. The president called again on top corporate executives to adopt accounting standards that will restore confidence in their financial reports. He also promised to punish business leaders who are found guilty of wrongdoing. Cooler weather is helping firefighters in Oregon bring a 17,000-acre wildfire under control. Jeff Brady reports from Oregon Public Broadcasting.
A dense, smoky haze has settled over north-central Oregon. The Eyerly Fire continues to burn in stands of ponderosa pine, juniper trees, and brush, but the blaze no longer threatens any houses. Over the weekend, 18 homes in an exclusive subdivision were turned to ash. Residents were allowed to return to their homes in the afternoon. The blaze still threatened some of the many eagle nesting sites in the area. Fire crews are in the process of building a 20-mile fire break around the blaze. Full containment is expected by Friday. Officials predict they will spend about $5 million fighting the blaze. For NPR News, I'm Jeff Brady in Warm Springs, Oregon.
Firefighters have had to scramble out of the way of three wind-driven wildfires along the California-Nevada border. The Gate Fire Complex has forced the evacuation of dozens of people in the area of Topaz Lake, about 75 miles south of Reno. Authorities are sending reinforcements to the more than 500 firefighters already at work on the blaze. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation, providing research and information on health issues to policymakers and the general public at kff.org.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Singer and banjo player Ralph Stanley is a bluegrass pioneer who's been making records for more than 50 years. But it's only in the past couple of years that his music has become a pop phenomenon. On the soundtrack of O Brother, Where Art Thou, Stanley sang the mournful solo, O Death, introducing millions of listeners to his high, lonesome sound. That soundtrack became an unprecedented success for folk music, winning 5 Grammys, including Album of the Year, and selling more than 5 million copies. Ralph Stanley's vocal solo won the Grammy for Best Male Country Vocal Performance. Now in his 70s, Stanley is in the middle of the Down from the Mountain concert tour, which grew out of the O Brother soundtrack. 2 years ago, he received the Living Legend Medal from the Library of Congress. Ralph Stanley first started recording in the late 40s as the younger half of the Stanley Brothers. His brother Carter died in 1966. Since 1967, Ralph has performed with his group, the Clinch Mountain Boys. Now he has a new CD produced by singer-songwriter T-Bone Burnett, who also produced the O Brother soundtrack. Before we meet Ralph Stanley, here's the opening track.
Oh, lift him up, that's all. Lift him up in his word. If you tell the name of Jesus everywhere, if you keep his name ringing everywhere that you go, he will draw men unto him. When he asked her for some water, her sin she tried to hide. She commenced telling the Savior all about race pride. But woman, if you only knew the gift of God, I came to draw men unto me. Oh, lift him up, that's all. Lift him up in his word. If you tell the name of Jesus everywhere, if you keep his name ringing everywhere that you go, he will draw men unto him.
It's Ralph Stanley from his new CD called Ralph Stanley. Ralph Stanley, welcome to Fresh Air. It's wonderful to have you here. What's different for you about this new CD, about either the songs or the musicians playing with you?
I have different musicians than my regular band because the songs are much older than I've been used to doing, and they needed just a little bit different timing in the music, and that's the reason why that I got a different band.
Now, this record was produced by T-Bone Burnett, who also produced the music for O Brother, Where Art Thou. Have you gone in different directions working with him or seen your own music differently at all by virtue of working with him?
Just the record, just this new CD, you know, I changed... as T-Bone said, I went backward to go forward. you know, I guess that makes sense. What I mean is I sang a little bit more back. You know, some of the songs I'd say are, T-Bone said, 300 or 400 years old. And I never did sing songs like that before. They're a little bit more, older and sound different.
And you like singing them?
I love singing them.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about O Death, which was the song you sang on O Brother, Where Art Thou? How did you first start singing that song?
I recorded O Death twice, once in the 70s and once in the 60s. But it was recorded different. It was recorded with music and a trio singing it. So when T-Bone called me in to do this O Death, why, he had an arrangement with this to use a banjo in it. And so I learned that way and sung it for T-Bone. And then I told him that I had a different arrangement I'd like to try and see what happened. And so I sung this version. That was the a cappella. And I hadn't sung but a couple of verses till he said, "That's fine. That's what we want."
Now, the church that you grew up in, the Baptist church that you grew up in, didn't allow instruments to be played in church. Did you sing a cappella a lot in church?
I certainly did. Yeah, they don't allow music in the church. They don't have anything against music. I'm a member of the Primitive Baptist Church, and they will buy every CD that I have released, but they don't want me to bring the instruments in the church.
Now, what have you always liked about a cappella singing?
Well, you don't have anything to bother you. You know, if you use an instrument, why, you have to stay on perfect timing. And if you do a cappella, I'm so bad to just wonder, you know, maybe I'll sing one verse this way and one verse another. And if you're doing it a cappella, you don't have to keep any time. You can just go out as far as you want to with it.
I guess you could bend the notes in whatever direction you want to also.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I like to do.
Now, this thing about not having instruments allowed in the church, how do you feel about that? Since, I mean, you're a banjo player as well as a singer, do you wish that you could play or that other people could play instruments in church?
Not really. You know, the top songs that they sing in the Primitive Baptist Church don't really fit an instrument. Because that's the way they sing. Like I was telling you, they bend it and twist it or however they want to sing it.
Is there a lot of harmony singing?
No, they don't do any harmony. The ladies, they sing a part, and then the men, they sang the same part, but it's all lead. But it, the way they sang it, it blends in. It's really beautiful.
And do you know the reason for not allowing instruments? Is it a purely musical reason, or is there a theological reason for not having it?
I really don't know about that. I'd say it's just a tradition that's been handed down. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we hear the a cappella version of O Death that you recorded for O Brother, Where Art Thou? And this is Ralph Stanley.
Oh, death, won't you spare me over till another year? Well, what is this that I can't see with thy cold hands taking hold of me? Well, I am death, none can excel. I'll open the door to heaven or hell. Oh, death, someone would pray, could you wait to call me another day? The children prayed, the preacher preached, time and mercy is out of your reach. I'll fix your feet till you can't walk. I'll lock your jaw till you can't talk. I'll close your eyes so you can't see this very hour. Come and go with me. Death, I come to take the soul.
That's Ralph Stanley from the soundtrack of the film O Brother, Where Art Thou? Ralph Stanley has a new solo CD, which is called Ralph Stanley. You have what's often described as that lonesome sound, or that high lonesome sound. Is that, would that, that describes your sound, but does it describe your place in the world at all? I mean, do you think of yourself as feeling that kind of lonesomeness, or is that just,
well,
yeah.
Well, that lonesome sound, you can't learn that. That
right.
has got to be born and bred in you. And it's a gift that God, I think, has given me. And he means for me to use that, maybe for some purpose. You know, it might change somebody. I've got many of a letter and a phone call from people saying that sound had caused them, you know, to change their life and join the church. And I just sort of believe that gift was given to me for me to use for that purpose.
Would you describe the part of Virginia that you grew up in?
I grew up down in the hills of Virginia. I can be in Kentucky in 20 minutes, Tennessee in 20 minutes, or in the state of West Virginia in 20 minutes. And it's down in the Appalachian Mountains down there, and it's sort of a poor country. Most of the livelihood is coal mining and logging, working in the woods and things like that. Most people has a hard life down that way.
And how did your family make a living when you were growing up?
My father was a logger. He cut timber and hauled it out of the woods and had a sawmill. He sawed it into lumber. And, you know, the mines needed things they called timbers and collars and so forth. And they used collars on a railroad track that they put the rails on. And he that was his occupation, just a sawmill man and a logger.
Did he have all of his fingers, or did he lose any of them in accidents?
No, he never did do any of the work. He was the boss. So he hired men to do all of that. He never did do any of the work.
So he must have made a decent living.
Yeah, he was. He did. He was. We were just maybe just a little bit ahead of maybe some of the neighbors and the folks. He did well with it.
And would you describe the church that you went to? You talked a little bit about the music in it, but what was the church like physically?
Well, it was a little old white building and had homemade benches in it. And, of course, it had a stand for the preacher to preach. And back in the early days, I've been told, you know, I line some songs sometimes, and I got that from the preacher. And I've heard that the reason that the preacher lined it, they didn't have the money maybe to print a song book for each singer. So he would line that song, and then all the congregation could hear the words and join in and sing.
I think I'm not familiar with that expression, lining a song. What does that mean?
Well, you give out the words and then sing them. You give out the words, you know, and the people can hear what you're giving out, and then they sing that song or that line, and then they do the same thing again.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Just like, you want me to give you a little sample?
Yeah, would you?
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. That's the line. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Was blind, but now I see. See, he gave that line out, and then they sung it.
My guest is Ralph Stanley. He has a new CD called Ralph Stanley. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. My guest is bluegrass pioneer Ralph Stanley. He's crossed over to new audiences as a result of his performance on the soundtrack of the film O Brother, Where Art Thou? He has a new CD called Ralph Stanley. So even though the church didn't allow instruments, all the singing in church was a cappella, when you got an instrument, when you got a banjo, did your parents frown on that, or was that perfectly acceptable?
No, my brother and me, he got a guitar and I got a banjo, and the only thing that was bad about that, we couldn't do too well at first, and sometimes my father would run us out of the house and we'd have to go out in the pasture field or somewhere. We lived on a little farm to practice.
Oh, because you didn't sound good? You had to practice far away?
Well, I guess he was a little nervous. He didn't think it sounded too good, I don't guess.
How did you get your first banjo?
My first banjo, my mother's sister, my aunt, lived about a mile from where we did, and she raised some hogs. And she had her, called the mother a sow, of a hog. And she had some pigs. Well, the pigs was real pretty, and I was going to high school, and I was taking agriculture in school. And I sort of got a notion that I'd like to raise some hogs. And so my aunt had this old banjo, and my mother told me, said, which do you want, the pig or a banjo? And each one of them was $5 each. I said, I'll just take the banjo.
It was a good choice, but why did you decide on it?
I guess I just liked the banjo the best.
How'd you learn to play it?
My mother played a little bit of the old-time clawhammer. She tuned the banjo up and picked one tune for me. And it just become natural to me. When she picked it, I just started and picked it too. And then from then on, I was on my own and learned.
Who started playing first, you or your brother Carter?
Well, I guess we started about the same time.
Mm-hmm. And he's a couple of years older than you or younger than you?
He was 18 months older than me.
Older than you, mm-hmm. What were your first performances like? Where were they?
You know, they have these senior plays at high schools, the high school where we went. And they would have one scene, and they would have to pull the curtains and change the scenes around. Well, a lot of times we would go out in front of the curtains and pick and sing for the people until they got ready to, got the stage set ready for the next part.
Did it make you popular to sing in school like that?
Made us popular in school, yeah.
Yeah. When you started performing with your brother, had you heard Bill Monroe? I mean, when you started performing professionally, had you already heard Bill Monroe?
Yeah, I'd heard Bill Monroe before we started professionally.
Were there things that you liked and tried to emulate about his sound?
Well, I never did try to do Bill's sound, but I liked his style. I liked his feel. But now Carter, he liked to sort of do some of his songs. But I wanted my sound, and were hit or miss. I always stuck to my sound.
One of the early breakthroughs for the Stanley Brothers in terms of reaching an audience is when you played on a new radio station in Bristol, Tennessee, on a show called Farm and Fun Time. What was the show like?
That is right. We started our show, or 55 minutes, from 12:05 each day till 1 o'clock. And we played it 6 days a week, and we would drive out and do personal appearances in theaters and schoolhouses and things, and then have a night, and then drive back and do a radio show the next day.
And was it amazing to you to suddenly start getting letters from listeners and, you know, be broadcast And then yeah, you started recording on a regional label.
Yeah, we signed. We recorded on a little record company, Richertone Record, to start with. I'll be about six songs. And, you know, then in 1947, we signed with Columbia Records. And then 1948, well, we did our first session with Columbia Records.
And what did you record on that first session?
Ma'am?
What did you record on that first session?
The first session, I believe, was Pretty Polly and I'm a Man of Constant Sorrow and maybe Lonesome River. We would record four at a time.
Well, let me play something from one of your early sessions on Columbia, and this is White Dove, and it's another one of your songs that is very popular. This is recorded in 1949. You and your brother have songwriting credits for this. Is this an original or a traditional song that you reworked?
No, that's Carter and me wrote that song.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to say about it before we hear it?
Well, it's been one of our most requested songs all through the years, still is. Everywhere that I play, we get requests for it, and I think it tells a good story, and I just think it's a fine song.
We were all so happy there together in our peaceful little mountain home. But the Savior needs angels in heaven. Now they sang around that great white throne. White doves will mourn in sorrow. The willows will hang their heads. I'll live my life in sorrow since Mother
Ralph Stanley will be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
I often wonder, will we all be together someday? And each night as I wander to the graveyard, darkness finds me where I need.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. And from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, Ralph Stanley on the death of his brother Carter and his decision to continue performing without him. And book critic Maureen Corrigan reviews Why I Am a Catholic by Gary Wills.
Was in the year of 92, in the merry month of June, I left my mother and my home so dear to go with the girl.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with bluegrass pioneer Ralph Stanley. At the age of 75, he's more popular than ever as a result of his performance on the Grammy Award-winning soundtrack recording O Brother, Where Art Thou. He has a new CD called Ralph Stanley. He started recording in the 1940s with his older brother Carter as the Stanley Brothers. Here's an example of the harmonies they were famous for. This is The Lonesome River, recorded in 1950.
The water rolls high on the river at midnight. I sit on the shore to grieve and to cry. The woman I love, she left me this morning with no one to love or kiss me.
On that recording that we just heard, your brother's singing lead, you're singing harmony, and also singing harmony is Darryl Pee Wee Lambert. Talk about the harmonies that you sang together, how you arranged it, who was singing which part.
Yeah, Pee Wee Lambert, he started out when we first started our group in 1946, and Carter did the lead singing, and I done the tenor singing. And we developed a new sound there before anybody else, called the high baritone. And Pee Wee Lambert did that. And that's just become, you know, real popular through the years. About everybody uses that now, but we were the first to do that particular sound with the three parts together. High baritone, you know, everybody had been used to doing a low baritone. We did a high baritone, tenor, and lead.
How did you work that out? How did you come up with the idea?
We were just practicing, you know, and just things like that comes to you. And we'd never heard it before, but we just was feeling around, rehearsing the song, and just happened to find it.
So by high baritone, does that mean he's singing the part that a baritone would be singing, except he's singing it an octave higher?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Man of Constant Sorrow, that was a popular song right from the start for the Stanley Brothers. And, of course, it's one of the songs that's used in the soundtrack of O Brother, Where Art Thou. How did you first learn the song?
The first time that I heard the Man of Constant Sorrow, my father, he knew one verse of it. I don't know where he got it, but he sung it. And Carter and me got together and put some words to it, and enough to start singing it, make a song out of it.
Oh, how much of the words did your father know?
I believe about one verse.
Oh, I see.
I don't know where he heard it, but that's another song that's probably a couple hundred years old.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a recording of Man of Constant Sorrow from 1950.
We recorded Man of Constant Sorrow for Mercury Records with the repeat chorus, just like the same arrangement that they do it on O Brother, Where Art Thou? And, you know, we have the arrangement on that now. And at first, well, I just sung it solo all the way through. And then later after that, well, I'd sang it some with the repeat trio and then some just straight solo.
Now, your brother usually sang lead in your recordings together.
He always sung lead.
How did you end up using this as a showcase for you singing solo?
Well, I did a lot of solos like that, like Pretty Polly, Little Maggie. And I would sing solos, and he would sing solos, too. But when we sang a duet or a trio, he would do the lead, and I would do the tenor.
Right. Well, why don't we hear this 1950 version of Man of Constant Sorrow? And here it is.
seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I
Stanley Brothers was Ralph Stanley, singing lead, recorded in 1950, I'm a Man of Constant Sorrow. Ralph Stanley, how do you think your voice has changed since you were recording with your brother back in the early days?
I really think my voice has got better in the last two or three years. I don't know why. I've been doing a lot more lead singing, and everybody tells me that my voice is better than ever, and I agree with them. Maybe I've learned to do more with it. I don't know what.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a real depth to your voice.
Well, thank you.
Do you think you're any less shy about performing than you used to be?
I reckon I am. I'll tell you, when we first started, I was scared to death. I dreaded going on the stage worse than anything. But now I don't care a bit.
What were you afraid of? Not that stage fright needs an explanation, but what kind of stage fright did you have? What was your experience of it?
Just people hearing my voice, a crowd of people, maybe not singing to suit them or something. Maybe I'd make a mistake or my voice would crack or something.
Mm-hmm. Did your brother Carter have the same insecurity, or was he more confident?
No, he was more confident. He was very forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, at about the time that the recording of Man of Constant Sorrow that we just heard was released, your brother Carter had, you had broken up professionally for a while, and your brother Carter was playing with Bill Monroe's band. Why did you stop performing together for a brief period?
Well, I got tired, and I wanted to rest a while, and Carter had always wanted to sing with Bill, so I just wanted to quit and rest a while, so he went with Bill.
And how'd you get back together again?
Well, he told me when he went, he said, "Now, when you get ready to go back, you call me." Well, about 4 months, I called him, and then we started back together.
What did you do during those 4 months?
I farmed a little bit and bought cattle and took them to market and, you know, just back to the pig business, something like that.
Was that what you wanted, or did you realize that's not what you wanted? You wanted music.
I wanted music. I just wanted to try that a little bit to see what would happen, but mm-hmm. I soon found out that that wasn't for me.
My guest is Ralph Stanley. He has a new CD called Ralph Stanley. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is bluegrass pioneer Ralph Stanley. He's crossed over to new audiences as a result of his performance on the soundtrack of the film O Brother, Where Art Thou. He has a new CD called Ralph Stanley. Now, you said before that your brother Carter was more comfortable on stage, that you had more of a problem with stage fright, you were shyer. He's the one who did, I think, most of the talking on stage as well as the lead singing.
He did all the MC work.
And did you ever wish that you could share that with him, or were you relieved that you didn't have to worry about that?
No, I never did want to do that, but I'd say a year, maybe a couple of years before he passed away in '66, we would be on the stage together and maybe singing a song, and when the song ended, he'd just walk off. And I had to come up there and say something or walk off too, so I would go up and start talking. And I believe he knew that I would be needing to do that someday, and I believe that that's the reason he done that.
You think he knew that he was sick and wasn't long for the world?
Yeah, because he was, you know, he was sick, and I think he knew that.
You know, as we said earlier, you have that real lonesome sound. Do you think of your brother as having had that too? And did you have the same taste in songs?
Yeah, we liked the same songs, but Carter's voice didn't have the lonesome feel that mine did. And, you know, after he passed away, I never did replace Carter, but I got a lot of good lead singers that could sing his part. And I don't think, I hate to brag on myself, but I don't think he could have ever replaced me, what everybody says.
Right, right. He died in 1966. Was it liver cancer?
Yes, uh-huh.
Did you know that he was sick? Did he know that he was sick?
Yeah, he knew he was sick. We had a doctor up in Bristol, Tennessee that we went to all the time, and he liked us. He played the banjo a little bit, and when we moved down in Florida, the doctor came down there one Christmas and on vacation, and he had his doctor instruments with him, and he took Carter in his house and examined him, and he told Carter, he said, if you don't quit what you're doing, he said, you won't last another year. And that was the 26th of December, and he passed away on the next year on the 1st of December.
Right, so the doctor almost hit it on the head.
He certainly did.
When your brother died, it must have really set you into a crisis, both, you know, personally and professionally.
Well, it did. I didn't hardly know what to do. You know, I wanted to carry on, but I didn't know where I could or not. But I got cards and letters by the hundreds, phone calls, telling me, said, please don't quit. We've always supported the Stanley brothers, and now we'll be more supportive to you because we feel like you might need it. So that, you know, that picked me up.
So when you decided that you were ready to start performing again, to start performing really for the first time without your brother, what were some of the changes that you had to make? You know, like you said, you were singing lead more often, but you had to find another singer.
Well, I had to find a lead singer, which, you know, a lot of people knew me and knew that I needed a lead singer. So I had several to pick from. I didn't have any trouble finding a lead singer.
Why didn't you feel like you could be the lead singer?
Well, I just always liked to sing tenor. Up until the last, I'd say 3 years, I've been doing a lot of lead singing. Of course, my son, Ralph Stanley II, he's my lead singer, but still, you know, I've been singing a lot of lead, too.
You've had good years and you've had lean years professionally. What were the most difficult years?
The most difficult years was when about the time Elvis Presley came out, that rock and roll boom. And that just about crippled everybody. I guess that's the reason that Columbia Records let us go, and there was a lot of entertainers that the record companies got rid of at that time, and it just crippled everything except the rock and roll.
Did you like Elvis Presley?
Well, I did. You mean to hear him?
Uh-huh.
I don't like that style myself. I never did like Elvis' singing, but there were millions that did.
A lot of people
try to stay current and keep changing their repertoire and the kind of instrumentation that they sing with in an attempt to stay current and reach new audiences and so on. And that's not what you've done. You've kind of stuck to what it is that you do. Were there ever periods where people were convincing you that you had to get more current, you had to sing different songs or have different kinds of musicians with you?
No, I've never thought of anything like that. All that the people tell me that, they're glad that I'm keeping the same old-time sound I started with. And I believe that's why, I've been in it 55 years, and I believe that's the reason I'm here today.
Where do you live now? How close to where you grew up in Southwest Virginia do you live?
I live about 6 miles from where I was born and raised.
Do you have land?
Yeah, I've got some land. I've still got the old home place where I have a festival each year, and then I bought 6 acres about 6 miles from where I was raised and built a house and live there.
Do you have any farm animals?
I've got a couple of horses and got a few cattle. I couldn't hardly get that completely out of my system. So I lose money every year on them, but that's just a hobby I like.
Well, that's nice. It's interesting that you have achieved more popularity now in your, I think, mid-70s than you've had in years. And people are usually assuming it's going to be the other way around. Are you surprised by this reversal?
Yeah, I'm surprised. Back about 7 or 8 years ago, I got a lot of the country entertainers to sing with me and recorded a CD, and it done real well. And then I went back and done the same thing again, only got more country entertainers. And then this old brother thing came along, and I think that's done more for this old-time music than anything that ever happened.
When you were first invited to sing on the soundtrack of it, did you expect that it was going to have the impact that it did?
I don't think anybody expected that. I didn't. I don't think anybody did.
Are you singing for a lot of audiences now that are first getting introduced to you?
Yeah, very much. A lot more younger folks. And I was inducted in the Grand Ole Opry in 2000. That helped me. And I just seem like everything's come my way lately.
Well,
in my old days, should maybe be retired, but I feel good and just feel like I need to go on.
So you're touring a lot?
Yeah, I've been playing something like 160 days a year, but I'm going to cut down some.
That's a lot by anybody's standards, I think.
That is.
Do you have a family at home?
Yeah, I have a wife and one of my grandsons. He's been with us ever since he's a baby.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm so happy for the success that you have now. Happy for us listeners and happy for you. So thank you so much for talking with us. Why don't we end with another track from your new CD, which is called Ralph Stanley. And Ralph Stanley, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, and I've enjoyed it.
Coming up, book critic Maureen Corrigan reviews Why I Am a Catholic by Gary Wills. This is Fresh Air. Gary Wills is one of America's most prominent historians and critics. He's the author of many books, including the Pulitzer Prize winner Lincoln at Gettysburg. Wills is also one of America's most publicly prominent Catholics, and his latest book, Why I Am a Catholic, is intended to address, among other things, the scandals that have recently rocked the Catholic Church. Book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review.
A few weeks ago, I had a meeting with a lawyer to fill out some paperwork. We got to a line on the form that asked about my religious affiliation. Skeptical Catholic, I told the lawyer. She smiled politely and wrote down, none. I let it go. Maybe you have to be inside the club to appreciate that skeptical or even lapsed Catholicism is its own religious subdenomination, not a form of atheism. Catholics with a question mark, like me, go to Mass erratically. We're the ones responsible for spiking attendance figures after September 11th. Confidently secular friends of mine regard the priestly pederasty scandals with an air of smugness. What do you expect of the people who gave us the Inquisition? Said one cynic I know. The whole horror certainly makes me sad for the victims of priestly sexual abuse, but also for the decent priests I've met who have a tough enough time these days publicly sporting that Roman collar. In my most optimistic moods, I think the scandals will hasten in the inevitable ordination of women, at which point, who knows, I might even rejoin the fold. Even though he doesn't share my spiritual condition of being perpetually on the fence, Gary Wills understands it. A lifelong practicing Catholic, one who even says the rosary regularly, Wills has also been a longtime critic of the church, who believes he shouldn't have to check his brains at the door when he attends Mass. A couple of years ago, Wills wrote a book called Papal Sin that discussed the dishonest dealings of the church hierarchy in modern times. In his latest book, Why I Am a Catholic, he resumes his clear-eyed scrutiny of Machiavellian church officials. About the bishops and cardinals who've covered up the monstrous actions of priestly sexual abusers, Will says, they reason this way. Since the saving truth of the gospel will reach more souls in need of it if they feel that priests bringing it to them are holy, it is necessary, for the good of souls and the honor of God, to maintain the priestly aura with deception. That is, the truth must be served with lies. Why I Am a Catholic is meant as a sequel to Papal Sin, as well as a response to those readers who questioned how Wills can remain a Catholic in light of all the evils he's ascribed to the Church. Troubled belief is not disbelief, Wills says in the introduction to this book. An unexamined faith is not a faith, it is a superstition. Why I Am a Catholic is really two books, at least. To answer the central question about the endurance of his faith, Wills writes an entertaining and succinct spiritual autobiography in which he talks about his partly Irish Catholic boyhood in the 1940s and his years as a Jesuit seminarian, the only time in his life, he says, that he seriously questioned the existence of God. He also recalls his friendship with fellow Catholics like William Buckley and the Berrigan brothers, and his deep love of G.K. Chesterton, the early modern Catholic writer who's been a perpetual inspiration. The second narrative here is more scholarly, dealing as it does with the 2,000-year saga of the Catholic Church and the, at best, speckled careers of all the popes who've ever presided over it. John Paul II, the current pontiff, earns particularly scathing criticism for his close connections to Opus Dei, a secretive, ultra-conservative, and quasi-religious sect, as well as for his dogged insistence on alienating millions of Catholics worldwide over the issues of birth control, abortion, gay rights, and the ordination of women. This, the most extensive section of Will's book, is addressed to readers who already care about church history and theological and political arguments. Even when Will's waxes personal again, as he does in the final chapter where he discusses his bedrock belief in the Apostles' Creed, he's not preaching to the uninitiated. Instead, he sounds, well, like a former Jesuit, someone whose faith is intertwined with rigorous mental disquisitions. Wills won't win any converts to Catholicism with his theologizing, but on the other hand, his learned, contentious approach to religion is a refreshing change from New Agey pap, as well as from the know-nothing, knee-jerk fundamentalism that's informing the current national debate about the Pledge of Allegiance. If God and country are worth fighting for, Gary Wills might say, they're also worth fighting with.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Why I Am a Catholic by Gary Wills. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Megan Howe, Patty Leswing, and Jessica Chu. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Bantam Books, a division of Random House, publisher of Clan of the Cave Bear and all the novels by Jean M. Aul, already available in paperback. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, a professor of Islamic law discusses why he briefly became a fundamentalist when he was in his teens and the insights that experience has given him into today's Islamic terrorists. We talk with Khalid Abu al-Fadl, a professor at UCLA. Also, Leo Litwack on his experiences as a medic in World War II. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.